Islam is perfect, but Muslims are not. This podcast today is dedicated to the five pillars of Islam because I've gotten so many questions on it. So I want to just break down what it means to be a Muslim. If this is not something that you're interested in, you want to go straight into business and law and hustling, then move on to the next podcast. But today I wanted to dedicate some time to talking about my religion and how it interacts with my business, my work, my family, and everything else. So let's get started. As you all know, I'm attorney Ali Awad, the CEO lawyer, and we wanted to switch it up today because I wanted to talk about the five pillars of Islam. There are five pillars that make you Muslim. You do these five things, you're considered a Muslim. The first, and I would say the most important one, is the Shahada, which is bearing witness that there is no God but Allah and that Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, is his messenger. This is called the Shahada. Basically, anytime someone accepts Islam, and you're going to see, if you just YouTube and Google Shahada, S-H-A-H-A-D-A, and maybe there's an H at the end, right? Because it's an Arabic word that's being transliterated. You'll see that, you know, there's people that are raising their hand or raising their finger, raising their hand and saying, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh, which just means, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and there is no deity that is worthy of worship except Him, and that Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, is the seal and the final messenger of the prophets. And that's the Shahada. That's the very first thing, is because, and I think it's super important because there's this concept in Islam that your intentions are what matter, right? Innamal a'malu bin niyyat. This is a phrase that we use all the time. It means that your actions are based off of your intentions. And the crazy thing is that even in the law, there is a concept of mens rea, where your mental capacity has to be coupled with the actus reus, the action that you have. That's a very simple concept in criminal law, which applies in the United States, in countries almost all over the world. There's always an element of intent and the action. So it has to start with the intent. Even in order to do your prayer, you have to make the intention that you're going to make the prayer. Before you eat, you have to make the intention that you're going to nourish yourself and that God is blessing you with this food and this bounty in front of you. You have to make the intention that you're going to do a good deed. And so it's really important that your intentions are pure, and not just from a religious perspective, but from a physical and metaphysical perspective. You know, I intend to do this. And I think that's when your mind and your heart are aligned. So the very first pillar is the Shahada, which is not only the intention, but the physical illustration and manifestation of bearing witness that there is no God but Allah, and that Prophet Muhammad is his last messenger. Now, that's the first pillar. The second pillar, and I'm not going in probably the correct order, I'm just going in based on the things that are coming up to my mind first. Prayer. There is a hadith, which is basically, let's take a step back. There's the Quran, which is our holy book. It's similar to the Bible and the Torah. So if you're Christian, Catholic, you know there's a holy Bible, you follow the King James Version, there's a New Testament, Old Testament, right? And then there's the Torah for Judaism. The thing about the Quran is that it was brought down 1400 years ago through the Archangel Gabriel, and it has not changed at all. Not a single letter, not a single accent, not a single word has been misplaced or changed throughout the entire 1400 years that it's been in existence. And the incredible thing is that there are over a million people that have memorized every single word and every single accent in this book. The same can't be said about any other religion. That's why Islam is such a powerful religion, because if the entire world were to be obliterated, the internet no longer worked, all the books had been destroyed, and all that was left was humanity and their minds, there are enough Muslims in the world right now to put together the Quran, letter by letter, word by word, accent by accent, perfectly, with no mistakes. And I don't think any other religion can say the same. Because when I was preparing to get my black belt, this is like in 2004, We grew up in Dalton, Georgia, and there was this Ben Kiker's United Karate Studios in Dalton, Georgia. It's in the Bible Belt, and it's a Christian school for all intents and purposes, because when you walk in, they have these like Bible verses inside the studio. And it didn't bother us, because there's also a rule in Islam that says you must obey the law of the land that you are in. So people think Sharia law is completely contrary to American law or the state-specific jurisprudence. It's not. It's actually one and the same. Because in order to be a law-abiding Muslim, you must abide by the law of the land in which you are located. So with us going to a karate studio in Dalton, Georgia, and seeing these Bible verses in the studio, it didn't bother us at all. In fact, in order to become a black belt, you had to memorize the first psalm of the Bible. Psalm 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat that is scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. And there's more to it. But I learned this 20 years ago to get my black belt. And so the point is that even in religion, and when we were doing these, when we were studying for the first psalm, the people that I took the black belt test with all had different variations of the same psalm. Because some of them were looking at the King James Version, some were looking at a different variation of the New Testament, and there would be like one word mixed in and out. The concept was still the same, but it wasn't perfect. It wasn't 100% consistent. And that's the difference, I think, between Islam and every other world religion. There are no inconsistencies in the Quran. That is our holy book. Every word, every letter, every accent is going to be the same throughout, no matter where you go in the entire world. I've lived in China, I've studied in Turkey, in Brazil, in Spain, in Morocco, in Mexico, and every mosque that I go to throughout the world has the same exact Quran. So that's the first pillar of Islam, is the Shahada, making the intention that God is one and Prophet Muhammad is the last messenger. Then there's prayer. In prayer, there's a hadith, which we touched on earlier. There's the Quran, which is the holy book, and the ahadith, which is basically stories of the prophets and of Islam that kind of guide you on the lifestyle of Muslims. And there's different types of ahadith, meaning there's different stories and different recounts of the lifestyle of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, and his messengers and how they lived. And so one of the ahadith, one of these stories, one of the recounts says that there's the difference between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is the prayer. Now, I don't want to offend any Muslims that don't pray. But in my opinion, if you don't pray, you're not a Muslim. Now, I have seen shuyukh, and I've seen, you know, world leaders and imams that say, oh no, if you believe in your heart that you're Muslim and you make the shahada, then you are Muslim. And I agree with that too. But I also think that you can't ignore the fact that the difference between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is the prayer. And, you know, if you just go to Friday once a week and go to the mosque and say what's up to your boys and then pray and that's it, it's not the same as doing your five obligatory prayers every single day. There are five prayers in Islam. Every Muslim in the world is obligated to pray five times per day. The first prayer is the prayer in the morning before sunrise. It's usually 30 minutes to an hour before sunrise. By the time the sun rises, it's too late to make that prayer. Now, if you wake up late, something happens, it's okay to make it up, but you're actually not allowed to pray from sunrise until noon. That 7 a.m. to noon window is there, and the reason that we don't pray during that time is because there are other religions and other deities that are worshipped during that time. So Islam does not want to be like other religions, and we don't want Muslims to be like other religions. In fact, we stray away from anything that could show that we're worshiping anything else. And in this situation, it would be the sun, because there are people that worship the rising of the sun. And so they start praying from 7 a.m. to noon as the sun is rising. And this is exactly why Islam, our religion, put the prayer before the sunrise. Once the sun has reached its zenith, then that's when the next prayer is due. That's the prayer of Dhuhr. So the first prayer is called Fajr prayer, the morning prayer. Second prayer is Dhuhr prayer. That one is usually around lunchtime, 1 or 2 o'clock. It's usually after the peak of the day. And the reason for that is because the sun is no longer rising. Now it's at its peak, and that's when we pray. That's the second prayer of the day. The third prayer is Asr prayer, which is, it's that weird sound. Like even my name in Arabic is Ali. Ali Awad. And so, you know, if you speak Arabic, you know that that sound. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just in the back of the throat. But Asr prayer is the middle prayer. And there's a lot of ahadith and stories that say the Asr prayer is one of the most important, like as-salatu fi waqtiha, prayers in their own time, but also, you know, hafidhu ala salat al-wusta, which means like pay attention to the middle prayer. And the middle prayer of the day is Asr. And I think this one is also very important because Asr is the end of the peak of the day, meaning this is when the sun starts to set. So it's usually like around, you know, 3 to 5 o'clock, depending on what time of year you're in. And by the way, these prayers are always switched around depending on the length of the day. That's when that final prayer, that third prayer is due. So if you pray it late, it's almost like you're worshiping the sun being set. And we definitely don't want that because there's only one entity that you should be worshiping. So Asr prayer is the middle prayer. Maghrib is at sunset. That is the fourth prayer of the day. That's usually one of the shorter ones because during Ramadan, during our month of fasting, and we have a podcast on that too, when the sun sets and it's time to eat, we pray. It's 3 rak'ahs, 3 units for that prayer. And usually it's pretty fast. We do it in a couple of minutes. And then finally, the last prayer, the nighttime prayer, is called Aisha. And that one is usually an hour or two after Maghrib prayer. It's usually at the end after it's completely dark outside. So those are the five prayers. And they're split up into units of prayer. Fajr is 2 units of prayer. Dhuhr, the second prayer, is 4 units of prayer. Asr, the middle prayer, is also 4 units of prayer. Maghrib is 3 units of prayer. And Aisha, the last prayer, is 4 units. So if you add them all up, every Muslim is required to pray 5 times a day, 17 different units of prayer. Meaning, and in every unit, you're supposed to say the Fatiha, which is the first chapter of the Quran. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, malik yawm al-deen, iyaka na'budu wa iyaka nasta'in, ihdina s-sirat al-mustaqim, sirat al-ladhina an'amta alayhim, ghayr al-maghdubi alayhim, wala ad-dallin. This is the Fatiha, the opening, and I should probably pull up the translation because it's, you know, verbatim, but it's the opening chapter of the Quran. And if you Google it, just look up Fatiha, F-A-T-I-H-A, you can see what that means. But every single prayer, you have to recount the name of your Lord, the blessing that He's bestowed upon you, and it's like your intention of making this prayer. So prayer is super, super important for our religion, and I do think that it's what separates the Muslims from the non-Muslims. Now, the third pillar of Islam is fasting, Sawm Ramadan. Every year, we have the month of Ramadan. It's 29 to 30 days of fasting. And every year, it's 11 days earlier because Islam is based on the lunar calendar. So in 2022, I think it was in April and May. And so every year, it goes back 11 days. So I remember when I was a kid, I started fasting at age 5, and I have not missed a single day of fasting since I was 5 years old. So 1995, I think that, so that was like what, 27 years ago? Yeah, 27 years ago, 1995, I started fasting. And that meant that it was probably around February, January, February is when we started, when we were doing the month of Ramadan, which meant the days were shorter. If I had started fasting, if I was 5 years old during the summertime, it would have been impossible for me to wake up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, eat, break my fast. That's how the word breakfast came about, is when you wake up in the morning, you break your fast. Well, we call it breakfast when you actually eat in the afternoon, in the evening, during Maghrib time. So when I was five, Ramadan happened to be in the winter time, so there were shorter days, which made it easier for me to fast. But for the kids that are growing up now, it's like almost impossible to fast during the summer because the days are much longer. So it's 29 to 30 days of fasting. And it's 29 or 30 because the moon, it's based on when there's a complete new full moon or a new moon. And usually that's every month, but either 29 or 30 days. And it's 11 days sooner on average every single year. Ramadan is the month of, it's the most holy month of the year for Muslims. This is the month where we believe the gates of paradise are open. This is when all of your intentions and all of your prayers are answered. And this is exactly when we really take the time to worship and to remember Allah and remember the Messenger, peace and blessing be upon him. So this is a very, very holy month for Muslims. And I think in 2023, it's going to be again in April, maybe getting up closer to the end of March. Ramadan, and we have an entire podcast on this, the fasting of Ramadan is obligatory for Muslims. It's one of the five pillars. So you can't, and I say this tongue in cheek because, you know, I'm not the one that decides whether someone is Muslim or not. And I know that I said earlier, if you're not praying, then you're not really considered Muslim. That's just based on the hadith, and that's based on the recount that the difference between Muslims and non-Muslims is the prayer. And I think the difference between Muslims and non-Muslims are the people that actually observe the five pillars. I mean, think about if you're in a huge, huge building, right? And then there's these five literal pillars that are holding up the whole building, okay? It's like a pentagon. It's the foundation. So five pillars like this. Top, boom, 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 okay? Five pillars. And these hold up a massive structure above it. If one of those pillars gets knocked out, that entire structure is going to cave in on that side. And it's going to put so much pressure on the other pillars that I don't think the rest of the building can stand up. So I do think that you have to practice all five of these pillars in order to be a full Muslim. I don't know if there's part-time Muslims out there, but the truth is, fasting Ramadan is obligatory. And so if you're not fasting during Ramadan, you're like, oh man, I work too hard. I work outside. I'm on my gym thing. I don't want to fast right now. I think you're doing a huge disservice to yourself. You know, God doesn't need any of us. We're the ones that need him. So I think you should really pay attention and remember that if you want to call yourself a Muslim, you should practice the five pillars because they're obligatory. Now, that's the third pillar of Islam. The fourth pillar. So we said the shahada, the fasting, the prayer, the fasting, the zakat. This is something that a lot of people don't know. Every year, Muslims are obligated to donate 2.5% of their wealth. And that means typically cash on hand. Okay? So it does not include your home. It does not include your car. It does not include your clothing. It does not include the jewelry that you actually wear. It just includes the cash on hand and the wealth, like gold coins, silver coins, whatever you share, like you have, or stock market, for instance, or additional investments, that wealth that you've held on to for over a year. So if you've had over $50,000 in your savings account for an entire year, you owe 2.5% of that, $1,250, okay? And zakat is a specific type of donation that must be made to the poor and to the needy. So it's not a donation that you can say, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to donate, my $1,000 or $2,000 to this, you know, nonprofit organization that helps pets. Okay? That's not considered zakat donation. You can go and give your zakat donation literally to the homeless people, literally to the starving kids and families in other countries that have been devastated by war. That is the purpose of zakat. And it is ingrained in the religion that we are obligated to give back to those communities and to the people that are needy of those resources. So 2.5% of your wealth every single year is obligatory and it is mandated by the religion. It is one of the pillars of Islam, zakat, Z-A-K-A-T. And you know, everyone can do it at whatever time they want, but I just do it during Ramadan every year just to be on the safe side. So I just go ahead and pay because, hey, you might as well. The gates of paradise are open, so this is a good time to do extra donations, to give more back to your communities and to donate for the sake of Allah and for the sake of God. So yeah, that's when I do it every year, but you can obviously do it whenever you want. If you want to do it January 1st, December 31st for tax purposes. We got plenty of podcasts on taxes, right? We'll talk about that later. Finally, the fifth pillar of Islam. We have four obligatory pillars so far that are the shahada, bearing witness that there is no God but Allah and that Prophet Muhammad is his messenger. The prayer, praying five times per day, the 17 units, Fajr, Dhuhr, Asr, Maghrib, and Isha. The fasting of Ramadan, observing the month of Ramadan every single year. And by the way, the women that are pregnant or menstruating during that time, they're not obligated to do it. If you're sick, if you're elderly, if you're unhealthy and you're otherwise unable to do it, you're not obligated to do it. There's nothing in the religion that's going to require you to do something that is devastating to you. Okay? Islam is perfect, Muslims are not. If there's ever a reason that people are not getting what they want out of the religion, it's because we're misinterpreting it. So the fourth pillar of Islam is the zakat, the donation, 2.5% of your wealth every year. And the fifth one is obligatory only if you are able. So only if you are capable of doing this fifth pillar does it become mandatory for you, and that is going and doing your pilgrimage in Mecca. So every year, there are obviously months during the year. Ramadan is actually a month on the Islamic calendar. Well, there's also Dhul Hijjah. There's also a month where we do Hajj, and that's the pilgrimage to Mecca, and that's the time when the pilgrimage to Mecca is considered within the timeliness and within the religious constraints, or probably a better word for it, are parameters of when Hajj is supposed to be performed. So there are other people that go throughout the year just to visit the holy shrine in Mecca, and they do the circumambulation around the Mecca. That's called Umrah. That doesn't fall under the requirement of Hajj, which is one of your obligations in Islam. As a Muslim, if you are able to financially and physically, you must go to Hajj. You must perform the pilgrimage to Mecca. Now, Mecca is the city in Saudi Arabia, and it's the direction where all Muslims pray. So when I'm doing my five prayers during the day, I'm always facing Mecca. And historically, there actually used to be a different location where Muslims would pray. It's a different mosque in Saudi Arabia. But that's a story for a different time. But ever since then, ever since like 1400 years ago, probably actually more like 1200 years ago, Mecca became the center of Islam, and for all Muslims, they're obligated to pray in the direction of the Kaaba, the black shrine in Mecca. And so when you go to Mecca, it's the biggest, most incredible place you've ever seen. Like, can you imagine 4 million people in one place? Like, you'll go to a football stadium and you'll see like 90,000 people there, and you think that's a lot. Imagine 200 times that much, 400 times. Like, it's insane, right? No, it's not 400 times, like 20, 40 times, right? 40 football fields, 40 stadiums full of people. That's what Mecca is. And for the most part, I mean, everyone is there for the same purpose. We're there to worship. We're there to ask for forgiveness of Allah, and we're there to do our obligation to our religion. So I went to Mecca in 2018. It was just a few months after I got married, took my parents, took my wife. It was an incredible experience. And there's something that I learned while I was there. And if you're a Muslim, I really want you to pay attention to this. So when I went to Mecca in 2018 and I did my pilgrimage to Hajj, I had roommates. So I was rooming with my dad and then these two other guys. One of them was from Iraq, from Iraq. And the other guy, I think he was just from Chicago. But he was also a Palestinian guy. And when we started talking, getting to know each other, I noticed that the guy from Iraq had been saving up for the past 5 years just to be able to do that pilgrimage. He'd been saving his money for 5 years. just to be able to do that pilgrimage, because that's how important it was to him. And I know I have tons of friends and family, and if you're listening to this, you're watching this, I'm talking to you. You have the financial means to go and do it. It's an obligation of our religion to do pilgrimage in Mecca. And if you have the $10,000 or $20,000 that it costs for the flights, hotels, you know, round trip, all inclusive, and you don't have to do the expensive package, you can go and stay in the Aziziyah if you wanted to and go see the people, see all the Indonesians that are coming in for a real pilgrimage, all the Pakistanis that are coming in for a real pilgrimage, all the Africans that are coming in for a real pilgrimage, and see what those people are going through. You have a real appreciation for what God has given you for being here in the United States and having a little bit of a cushion, a safety net, a little bit of savings, a roof over your head. I'm not saying to sell all of your belongings to go to Mecca, but I am saying that if you have a little bit of cash savings and you have your health right now, most importantly, you probably have the ability to go to Mecca. So take it seriously. It's an obligation of your religion, and it's the fifth and final pillar that we wanted to discuss today. So that was the topic of today's podcast. I hope that this was beneficial and insightful for you all. If I've said anything incorrectly, then it is my mistake. And if I said anything correctly, then it is because of God. And thank you all so much for tuning in today. We'll see you all on the next one.